Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS, and I am the net control operator for this, the Limarc Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 44 years, and every Sunday night at 8 p.m. we sit in front of our radios, and we chat with each other, and we listen to each other, and we learn from each other, and we teach each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me here at this Sunday night at 8 p.m. for our Labor Day weekend edition. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you want to reach Paul, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Also, as always, I offer a link page of interesting articles and YouTubes that I've seen throughout the week. That's available by just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We also offer a chat room. You can get to it by just typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. And we offer an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and we keep the audio live the rest of the week, so you can pretty much listen in to Glen Oaks Repeater. You get there by typing into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And as always, I like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limarc Technical Net that go all the way back to September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have either moved away from the neighborhood or unfortunately become silent keys over the years. Their wisdom is embedded in the audio files in amateurradio.tv, and take a look at them. I'm sure you'll find them fascinating. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, regular standard operating episode tonight. We don't have any guest speakers. We will ask, and we don't even really have too much in the way of artificial intelligence this week. I haven't really been able to find anything interesting or amusing even. So we'll pass on the AI for this particular week. We'll go directly to the topics, questions, comments, what have you. I would hope that the early ones will be amateur radio related, but we will deal with any science and technology you wish to throw at us. I'll ask you to sign in and give me your first name and your call sign or science and technology, and we'll try and take them in order unless there's someone who has very little time on his hands and he has to come and go rather quickly. So we are known to make adjustments. That should take us approximately to 10:15, and I will hand it over to Paul, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report. That shall take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If the shack is working the way it's supposed to, and I'm working the way it's supposed to, and the repeater is working the way it's supposed to, and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times tonight. Usually, I get thrown off about once or twice. So we'll see how things go. I'm wishing for good things. Let the net begin. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics of discussion they wish to share with us all, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
WSN AI topic.
Paul recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down for tonight? Gosh, this looks like it might be one of our shorter technical nets. It was shorter for my 10-meter net this morning, although propagation on 10 meters is significantly better this Sunday than in past 2 months. I think we're getting away from the geomagnetic storm disruptions, and we're going to be able to talk a wider range on 10 meters. I spoke to California and Idaho this morning. So hopefully 10 meters is back in business. But nevertheless, I'll ask one more time if anyone else wants to be put on the list for tonight.
AC2BZI, Eddie listening?
Okay, Eddie. I assume from you saying listening that you don't have a question or a comment for tonight.
November 2, Whiskey Golf Delta. Good morning, gentlemen. My name is David, and I will be listening.
Okay, very good. Well, let's start it off, and hopefully over the next hour or so, some people will come to the repeater with questions or comments or topics. So, Paul, what can I do you for?
Hey, I topped 10 meter net. I did try that this morning, and yeah, the bands were open. I 5 minutes before you guys gone, I didn't hear you at all. But I did hear Mexico booming in, but you know, zero from Brooklyn, absolutely nothing. So, but I gave it a shot on 28380. I don't know if you moved or not. Did you move? Because I was tuning up and down, but I heard nothing.
I moved to 381, which shouldn't have been a problem, but I have never talked to anyone, well, with the exception of one guy that I'm always suspicious about, who said that he was coming out of Fire Island. In all the years of being on the 10-meter net, I have never talked to anyone on Long Island. There seems to be some force field between Queens and Long Island.
Okay, very good. Yeah, two guys, they were talking. Well, the two guys I heard were actually from the island. One guy was pretty loud, the other guy very low, but they were speaking to XZ2ARP, Lewis. And, but, you know, then they went away, and then I gave it a shot. I called you a couple of times, but, of course, no copy. You know, you're shooting right over my head. Anyway, AR. Well, a quick sentence about it that I read about it. It's a stethoscope. That's an AI stethoscope that they're trying to develop. Apparently, this thing, I mean, it looks like a little small, it's like a very small remote control. It's not very big. And, you know, it's got the earpieces hooked up to it, and this thing listens to people's heart, and supposedly it can tell you all kinds of everything about how the patient is. It's going to be able to diagnose, you know, a large amount of people. I forget what percentage that they said, but really, it's supposed to be some kind of a breakthrough. They're saying that since it was invented in late 1800s, the stethoscope hasn't changed, and this is supposed to be a game changer. Anyway, I got it from the Guardian site, which isn't too bad. But anyway, if you get a chance, you could always research that, unless you know about it anyway. So I got to ask you what you think about it. It's not on the market apparently yet, but I think they're looking to push it. I'm sure who's ever developing it is anyway. AC2GS, WS2M.
AC2GS, I'm sure they are trying to push it. It's a little bit of hyperbole at the very beginning, which kind of makes me suspicious of everything. Although many doctors like their acoustic stethoscope, I still have mine. There are modern derivations. They've put microphones on the acoustic portion, and they put the graphic equalizer displays and all kinds of things so that you could visualize the murmurs that you're listening to or the clicks that you're listening to. It, you know, I mean, these are gosh, they must be at least 15, 20 years old now. So those are definitely different than the original acoustic stethoscopes that most doctors to this day probably still use. I don't know the percentage of electronic stethoscopes that are in use presently, but I'm sure it's a minority. And I'm sure they're going to, they plugged it into AI algorithms in order to kind of check what the sound is and put it through machine learning, and they have trainable stethoscope sounds that that they can train it on, just as they train large language models and such. I don't know if it's going to revolutionize the practice today or tomorrow. I'm sure eventually, when they get all the bugs out of it, it'll be able to do amazing things. Unfortunately, it kind of removes human beings from yet another job. And usually, these days, there's usually articles talking about they're experimenting and they're very excited and it's very good and they're picking up a lot more illnesses than they ever did before. And then a year or two later, you get an article that says they're generating a lot of false positives and they're diagnosing people who don't have anything wrong with them, and they have to go back to the drawing board. So eventually, like all things, I'm sure human beings will be able to be completely taken out of the equation, and this will all be just one big automated world.
Okay. Yeah, if it was just a scope, you know, talking about, you know, maybe amplifying it or doing something different, you know, that would have been one thing. I would have never even brought it up, but because it's supposed to be an AI stethoscope, you know, I figured let me ask you. Good answers, and but it doesn't sound like next time I go to the doctor anytime soon I'm going to be looking at one of these little. It looks like a small, like I said, a very small remote control, and they've got this thing hooked up. Okay, very good. Thanks, Roy. I'll turn it back to you. WS2N.
You're welcome, Paul. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, nowadays, everyone's marketing department is putting AI on everything. I'm waiting for an AI cereal any day now. You know, the bubble hasn't quite burst yet. Probably it's not going to for another year or so, but when it does burst, it's going to leave a whole bunch of people somewhat paranoid about artificial intelligence. But it's a useful thing. It's not quite as useful as people are promising, where we'll have infinite resources. I'm never quite sure how an artificial intelligence as smart as possible could simply have the access to infinite amount of source for, you know, gold and silver and all kinds of things. It's not going to turn lead into gold, I don't think, anytime too soon. But I don't know, a lot of questionable promises made. But we will see it. We'll see what's going on, and we will follow it. But yeah, like you mentioned about the microphones and such, that's been done 15 plus years ago. As soon as they were able to miniaturize these things to a reasonable size that doctors might carry them instead of stethoscopes. They were around, and they were selling them, I think, for $500, $800. It was a rather expensive version of a stethoscope, especially when an acoustic stethoscope is basically just a plastic diaphragm and some metal tubes and some rubber tubes stuck to two ear tips in your ears. Somehow they're able to charge a nice amount of money because they're selling them to doctors and nurses and hospitals and businesses and such. It'll be interesting to follow that as well. Thank you, Paul, as always, for participating or all you do on the net here. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limar Technical Net, and we got a lot of time to kill. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they'd like to roll around tonight, please hit that push-to-talk and ID yourselves.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf, Sam.
Hello there, Sam. How are you tonight?
I am good, thank you. I do have something for you.
Very good. What do you got?
What happens if you use a 13-volt power supply when you're supposed to use a 12-volt power supply?
Almost always nothing particular. People call a power supply 12 volts, but really if you plug in a fully charged lead acid cell, it's 12 point something. And most electronics is built on the conservative side. So for the most part, you can get up to the high end of 13 volts, in some cases the low end of 14 volts, without any problem. It depends upon the electrical engineer and his finesse. Usually they like to kind of build in a lot of wiggle room. Unfortunately, there are some devices that really can't get much going if you supply it anything less than 12 volts. So if you're using, say, a lead acid cell that's partially discharged, it's possible for it to be below the amount of voltage that it will work at. Again, each particular model has its own range that it's designed to work at. But 13 volts, I would be amazed and astounded if there is any reasonably built a piece of electronics designed for 12 volts that can't work perfectly fine at 13 volts.
Oh, that's good to hear, because I think I blew something. But thank you for your answer. I appreciate it, Roy. I hope you have some more activity this evening. I'm going to be listening as well.
Okie dokie. We'll see what happens. Usually people blow their fuses not so much because they're doing a higher voltage. It's more that there's some kind of short in the circuit that's running too much current through the fuse, because fuses are current sensitive. They're not really that much voltage sensitive. You know, very often, you know, people have fuses in their 12 volt or 13 volt ham equipment that's rated for 25 or 30 volts of potential. Anyway, once again, I am AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, hit the push to talk and let me know.
This is Kilo Romeo 4 Golf Echo November monitoring via EchoLink. My name is Bill. I'm in Parkland, Florida.
Oh, good to hear you, Bill. Good to have you aboard. If you ever have any questions or comments, feel free.
Thank you. I'm a brand new ham. I made it to General just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm hanging out because I used to be a Long Islander, and now I'm in Florida, and I've been in Florida quite a while. So as I became an old man, I decided to check back to the old neighborhood and see how much activity there was on 2 meters. And you guys are still here when I copied you on a scanner many, many years ago. So I just wanted to thank you for that, and back to you.
Okay, very good, Bill. Yeah, Limark has a long and distinguished history. There's a couple of good repeaters out and about here. Unfortunately, repeaters are not quite what they once were, you know, 20 years ago. You know, especially with auto patch and everything, it was a very, very popular means of communicating. But as everyone got a cell phone, the thoughts of auto patch kind of faded away, and unfortunately, there's not quite as much activity on the repeaters as there used to be.
Yes, sir. I noticed it's pretty dead. And in my local town, which I'm right by Fort Lauderdale, we have a lot of clubs here. And on my HT, which is all I got as a cheap HT for now, with the rubber duck. I haven't built an antenna for it just because I haven't purchased the adapter yet. I can only hit one, and they barely can hear me. So I figured I'd try Echolink for a little while until I get a radio or something that works good. But I appreciate it. KR4GEN.
Very good, Bill. Yeah, I started the same way. Even though I bought myself a nice handy talkie, I didn't really have the elevation necessary. I live in Brooklyn, so Limark's in Long Island, so it's kind of difficult to get there. So my first contacts on Limark were using my cell phone. I had the Echolink on it, so I connected to Echolink, and the funny thing was the guy on the other end had connected through Echolink from Romania. So, you know, we were just kind of using the repeater as a as an Echolink link.
Right, I noticed how that can be done. You know, I remember when Limark was on 147.0, and it was a long time ago when I listened to it on a scanner. I was an electronic technician for the Freeport School District, and I was more or less the MacGyver there. Just about anything that plugged in, I had to fix to component level. So we're talking about through the 80s, the entire decade of the 80s. So that's my history on Long Island. Yeah, I have a lot of memories about that.
Okay, very good. I mean, you're not the only guy who's doing this. We have a wonderful guy who lives in Nebraska who passed by the New York area many years ago. And when he landed in Nebraska, and was a little disappointed by the small amount of ham traffic, he got on his cell phone to Echolink and came over to Limark, and he's a regular here. He's a regular at the Kings County Radio Club as well. So welcome to Limark once again, and if you ever have any questions or problems or want to chat about some technical subject, you know where to find us.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'll send it back to the net, KR4GEN.
Okie doke, once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net, and we're open for business. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and tell me.
KC2VGI, I have a question.
Okay, what's your first name and what's your question?
First name, Eddie. I wanted to ask you, how do you rate an antenna for wattage? For instance, this antenna is rated for 10 watts, and this one's rated for 120. Is there any test that can be done to be able to know?
Well, unfortunately, no, because, you know, it's sort of like how do you make sure that a fuse blows at a certain amount of current? You pretty much have to expose it to that current and see if it blows. So, you know, if you got a box full of them, then that's a usable experiment, but not very usable when it comes to antennas. The problem is that the limitation usually of antennas is in the matching circuitry hidden inside, the traps if they have traps, or the ballon if they have ballons, or stubs, or what have you. It's either the extra little matching hardware, or it's the gauge of the wire. So obviously, if you were going to put up, we'll keep it something simple like a centrifuge dipole. As you make it thinner and thinner and thinner, it will carry less and less current. You know, you get yourself, for some foolish reason, a 32-gauge piece of wire to run as a centrifuge dipole, which is going to be extremely easy, even if just mechanically any kind of tension on the wire will snap it. In addition, you know, anything more than a couple of watts maybe is going to just kind of burn it up. So, unfortunately, I'd love to be able to tell you of an experiment that you could do to tell you exactly how many watts your particular antenna will tolerate, but most likely you're stuck with the marketing department or hopefully the engineering department of the company that you bought the antenna from. They've done these tests, hopefully, and their power ratings should be somewhat legitimate.
Thank you. I think it's KC2GS, if I'm correct. Thank you for your answer. That helped me a lot because I made a ground plane. I'm talking on it right now. And I put it out the window, and I connected an HT with 5 watts to it and 100 watt linear, 3 watts in, 100 out. And it blows a fuse, it can't handle it, but it'll handle 25 watts. What I'm using right now. So that's what happened to me. So I thought something was wrong with the radio or the HT or the linear because the relays were going off. It wouldn't hold it. So I connected the 120-watt rated dual-band antenna that I purchased. So they rated it at 120, and the system was fine. But the antenna that I made, the ground plane that I made, 19 inches and a quarter, it'll blow with anything over 30, you know, 40 watts.
Okay, I mean, that's usually not the way antennas kind of burn out. As a matter of fact, the way you describe it, they don't burn out. Yours didn't burn out. It blew a fuse, I assume, on your linear amplifier. Well, probably what's going on there is you have some significant amount of reflected power, and the linear amplifier is hitting the fuse because it's getting back too much power. Probably not particularly a power limitation, but a limitation given the resonance of the antenna, the lower power antenna that you're using. It'd be interesting to put a watt meter and set it in reverse and see what kind of power is going back when you're pushing 25 watts forward. My guess would be a significant amount.
Oh, okay. I got four elements on the bottom, an X. So I'm they're shooting straight out at 19 inches each. I'm gonna bend them a little bit down and see what happens. It's 12 gauge wire. Yeah, I didn't mean to burn out, but it was blowing the SWR relay. And when I switched the antenna, that stopped happening. But I do got a meter, and I think it was some kind of wattage rating, because my SWR is actually 0.2 when I get to 90 watts, that's what I get back with the working antenna. And when I put in 25 watts into it, the antenna that I made, that's the reading I get throughout the whole 2-meter band.
It's, I guess, 0.0, 0.1, 0.2. It's dead in the water. There's no feedback coming. There's no SWR coming back here. So I don't know why it couldn't handle the 100 watts.
Okay, that doesn't quite make sense. And you're not really talking about standing wave ratios. Standing wave ratios are 1.0 to infinity. They don't go below 1.0. You're telling me what your reverse power is, which is often used in calculating standing wave ratio. But if you have something that's really sucking up the power early on, the reflected power might read zero, but it still might not be a great antenna because it's just kind of it's soaking up the reverse power before it gets to the watt meter.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's what's going on because I'm not getting a reading on it, but I swear I'm not getting a reading on it. SWR, I think I calibrated it a dozen times, and it's a new SWR wattage meter, and it works perfect, but I think I'm going to bend the ground plane elements, the four elements, bend them down a little bit because they're shooting straight out. So maybe something's happening there with the reflection of the propagation.
Well, if you bend the radials, you'll probably change slightly the antenna feed point impedance. So if it's going in the right direction, it probably will be beneficial. It'll probably let you put more watts into it before it triggers, or you might get away without it triggering at all. So I wish you good luck, Eddie.
Oh, thank you. So, KC2BZI. That's all I could think of because I was wondering. The antenna I bought is rated in the manual. It said this dual band is rated at 120 watts, and its door is working fine. But the other one, it's finely tuned and everything, but it's not holding it, and it's 12 gauge wire. So I really don't know, except for the ground elements, the four ground elements that I got them shooting straight out. Like an X, instead of putting them on a 30-degree angle. That's all I could think of. Thank you again, on the side listening.
Okay, very good, Eddie. Yeah, I agree. It's a very simple experiment to do. You know, if it doesn't help, you could all bend it in some other direction as well. But if it's a matter of an impedance mismatch, bending the radials will have an effect. If it's enough to make it a useful antenna, we don't know yet, but again, I wish you good luck on that. So here we all are. It's 8:34, and I'm AC2GS. This is the Limewatch Technical Med. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics for discussion tonight, feel free to hit that push to talk.
Kilo Echo 2, Foxtrot Lima Bravo.
Yes, what can I do you for?
I apologize, I didn't get a chance to sign in earlier. I wanted to discuss, and I had some questions about the recent NOAA satellites being decommissioned earlier this month.
Okay, I don't know too much about satellites, so we'll see if someone out there does. What's your first name, sir?
First name is Ray, Romeo Alpha India Charlie Echo. I'm transmitting from Flushing, New York.
Okay, very good. Anyone out there knowledgeable about NOAA satellites?
I think you gotta have all kind of codes to be able to hit satellites. I think they got them for 2 meters as well.
Yeah, I believe he's interested in the decommissioning of the NOAA satellites.
Oh, okay, I'm not aware of any of that.
You look like a goofball starting to sound here again. From what I've heard, all the 2 meter NOAA satellites were decommissioned earlier this month, NOAA 18, 15, and 19. And I'm just kind of wondering if there's anything else out there that exists that's kind of like that, where I can get open source, you know, satellite pictures or weather information that's off-source, that's disconnected from the internet. Back to you.
Well, basically,
okay, I kind of looked it up, and yeah, they retired it on June 6th of this year, and that was NOAA 18, NOAA 19, August 13th, and NOAA 15th on August 19th. So my understanding is what's left are next generational satellites, which probably don't operate in the same way as the old ones retired. Again, if anyone has any expertise in this subject, please feel free.
Well, I think I got to go to the bathroom, but if anybody has anything good for Jack, they'll let me know.
Anyway, I assume that no one really has any good information. I'm terribly sorry, Rock. It's a little on the esoteric side, and it's not really amateur radio related. It's close to it, I understand, and there are guys who really like to use satellites and maintain programs that tell them when the satellites are overhead, and they like to try them all out, but I don't really have much expertise in NOAA satellites, and I guess no one listening tonight does either, so I'm terribly sorry.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, Jeff?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Is this distinct from the AMSAT system?
Yes, I believe so. It's all NOAA. The NOAA, scroll back. It's NOAA 19, 18, and 15 were decommissioned in the last month or so.
I'm sorry, those are oceanographic weather type things or amateur things? Just confused over here.
I think it's the polar operational environmental satellites. I don't think it's amateur in any way, shape, or form.
Roger. Sorry, back to that.
Okay, understood. Well, terribly sorry about that, but I don't think the few people here tonight are following NOAA lately. There are guys on the West Coast I know who are really deep in it, but I don't know anyone locally. So I'm sorry.
Well, thought I might ask just because of the whole 2 meter aspect. But thanks anyway. You were like those two, Fox 5 the Bravo.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, once again, this is AC2GS with the Limemark Technical Net. It's probably going to be one of our shorter ones this year, but we'll see what happens. You never know. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, please hit that push to talk.
WS2.
Yeah, Paul?
I couldn't really hear that station that was talking about the satellites. NOAA. Very low for some reason. You're coming in, you're booming it, but I couldn't hear him. Was he looking for some kind of a website to track the NOAA satellites? Because you can get that from the ISS detector. You know, I download that app. I use that for the space stations, or even in the Chinese space station. And then they have a whole list of all the other satellites, including NOAA. But sometimes you have to pay extra for that. I couldn't care less about that. I just care about the ISS, and of course that's free. So I really didn't hear the question. Back to you, Ron.
As far as I understood, he was up. He was, you know, annoyed with the fact that I would assume he was kind of doing something with the NOAA 18, 19, or 15, and it became decommissioned in the last month. And he seemed to be interested and curious if there were any similar satellites that he could then turn his attention to.
Oh, okay. Well, I know there's supposed to be other ones planned, but some of the ones that are up there are still functioning. You know, there's so many of them now, and they decommission them, but then there's other ones that have replaced it. You know, we'll still get, you know, hurricane pictures and all. From what I understand, that there's a few up there that are still working, which is good, especially now we're going into hurricane season. Years ago, God, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, there was guys that were into getting the pictures off of NOAA. I tried it, but it didn't work out. My computer wasn't good enough for it. And, you know, you'd be able to download the pictures. But that's about as far as I ever got with that. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, these are, the term they use for these are polar operational environmental satellites, POES. And apparently the next generation that is taking over their job are designated joint polar satellite systems. So I would assume that the intricacies of this newer system are different than the older ones. I don't think you could just swap out frequencies and keep on going, but I don't know.
Okay, I'll have to look into it myself. Yeah, there's a lot of missions that are going up that are nothing to do with amateur radio, but plenty of satellites going up for different purposes. And you're saying polar, that means that they're in polar orbit. So that's different. All the standard NOAA satellites are all in geosynchronous orbit. You know, they call them west or east. You know, they're located, you know, over Europe or over the Atlantic or over the Pacific. And then when one fails, I think, was it 11? I think one of them failed, and they have the capability of moving another one into its position. They've done a lot of that over the, not years, but decades. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Yeah, the three satellites that he was alluding to are all polar operational satellites, so they all operate in a polar orbit.
Yeah, that's different. Of course they won't be able to be positioned in one location. They'll be either low, meaning probably about 500 miles above the surface, and then there have to be multiple satellites, you know. We'll have to look into it. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Paul. once again, AC2GS here with the Limar Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or topics or points of interest, hit that push to talk.
I apologize, I didn't copy the other station's name, or call sign of you, but his name is Paul. Did you say that he was able to contact the ISS and the Chinese space station? I'm interested in what kind of setup for that investigation. Back to you.
I don't recall the gentleman discussing the ISS. Maybe it was someone else.
Said something about it, Roy.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's kind of difficult to understand that his amplitude of his signal was very, very low.
Okay. I'm not sure about his question. Is he asking about the ISS? Can you... Does he want to know when it's going overhead? Or, you know, that's what I use it for visual sighting. I use it for... You could use it for radio, too, but... I use it for visual sighting. That's they call it the ISS detector app. Works great. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah, that might be useful. Is there any way to figure out when someone will be in the mood to make contact with an amateur while they're overhead, or is it simply you try it and if you fail, you fail, and if you succeed, you succeed?
Yeah, I've tried to do that when they have passes coming over the island, but it was no luck. But then there's another website, I'll have to look that one up, that I have saved for all, basically all passes. Well, you actually know where the ISS is at all time. That's from NASA, although with this government, crazy things that they're doing, I hope they haven't canceled that. I haven't looked at that lately. But that one I have saved, and, you know, it might be going over in the daytime, which, of course, you're not looking for a visual sighting, but you could use that for trying to either work the repeaters on the International Space Station or with any luck, you know, that there would be an astronaut, you know, playing around in the Columbus module, trying to make contacts on, you know, on his time off. You know, they actually get time off on the space station, and they've done that before. But or you could, I like to do it for sightings at night, usually at dusk or early in the morning. It'll tell you the exact time when it's coming over the horizon, how many minutes pass, usually 6 to 8 minutes pass, and then you know exactly where it's coming over, what, you know, exactly coming over, you know, in the west, and, you know, exactly where it's going to be in the east when it disappears. And, you know, sometimes it's interesting, it's because of the shadow of the Earth as it's going over, it'll predict when the space station will, you know, go dark. And, you know, I'm watching it come over. It'll be, like, over the house. Oh, great. Looks great. And then I know exactly the second that it's going to disappear. And then, poof, it's gone, you know. It's always a lot of fun to do that. Anyway, back to you, Ron.
Okay, Paul, which app do you prefer to find out when it's overhead?
For visual, it's called the ISS detector. ISS detector. It was set up, downloaded, and follow the instructions. I have a whole list of things on the side. You know, you have to put in your location, or I think nowadays it'll actually, you know, scan your device, you know, because everybody has GPS. Years ago, I didn't have that. They used to have to put it in manually. But anyway, it'll look for your address, or you put your address in manually. Or you might want to change it. You might want to tell some guy down, you know, in Nebraska that, you know, I know when the satellite's going over your head, and, you know, you you put in a town in Nebraska, and it'll tell you where exactly that. So it's a good website, and it's free.
Ah, the magic word that hams love to hear, free. So I hope that helps. You know, get one of these apps or Google and find something, and you just have to be a little obsessive compulsive, and if you have really good luck, you might be able to contact the ISS. Okay, once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Well, if someone was trying to transmit, all I heard was noise. So if you can move your antenna or raise the output power or do something, you know, put it closer to the window. You know, try a couple of different things. Just because you might be getting the strongest signal from the repeater in this position doesn't mean that this is the strongest signal you can send to the repeater. So try to experiment a little bit.
AF2P, Ed, with a question.
Yes, Ed, what can I do you for?
Thank you. I know you've talked about it before. I am not familiar with VNAs. My question is, can a VNA directly measure and portray on the screen the capacitance of an antenna or the inductance of an antenna? I know you can figure it out from the Smith chart and making several measurements, but I want to know if you can do a direct measurement.
Well, I guess ultimately it amounts to the computational power that you put in a VNA. Most amateur radio operators' VNAs, they're a high of maybe $1,000, and they go down as much as $70 or $80. And none of the ones I'm aware of will directly give you capacitance or inductance. They will give you a reactance. And you could back that, you could reverse engineer that with just a calculator or just a four puncher. But I am unaware of a VNA that simply spits out the capacitance and inductance directly. If someone has a VNA that does that, please feel free to tell me.
Thank you. And by the way, I did a Google today. And I found some came up that are under $50. I have no idea if they're any good, but under $50, can you believe it?
And these aren't used. These are brand new.
Brand new from Amazon was one of them, and there's Banggood, you know, Chinese things, but right from Amazon, $44 or $45, as I recall.
Well, that's incredible. I must repeatedly tell people, caveat emptor, that the buyer beware. And you can't really depend directly on Amazon. There's a lot of people committing fraud through Amazon, and Amazon kind of reacts very, 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 very slowly. So I usually tell people just kind of Google one terabyte thumb drive, and you'll see a whole bunch of them being sold for $40. And there's no way you should be able to get a terabyte USB thumb drive for anything close to that amount of money. And usually they're Chinese, much lower capacity, where they've gone into the electronics and reprogrammed it to report the wrong capacity. But maybe I'll have to kind of double check it. I would be a little bit leery about that lower price. You know, sometimes if you read a really, really good deal, there's a reason why it's a really, really good deal.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it blew my socks off when I saw it. But anyway, thank you very much for the answer and the commentary on the Amazon could be abroad. Thank you.
You're welcome, Ed. Ed, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limewalk Technical Net. We're open for business if anyone has any questions, comments, or topics for tonight.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Yes, Sam.
Well, you were right. It did not burn brisket out, and it works great. So thank you for your optimism. It worked.
You're certainly welcome, Sam. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to get a real shoddy piece of equipment if you put 13 volts instead of 12 volts, because I'm willing to bet you that the overall majority of people who are plugging power into a 12-volt piece of equipment, a lot of times they're putting in 13.2, 13.4, 13.6. Lithium iron phosphate, the so-called 12-volt batteries that they sell, those actually operate in the mid-13 volts. So, doesn't surprise me, but I'm glad to hear you had success.
Well, with your words of wisdom, I gave it a second shot, and it works perfectly. Thank you. And I'll continue to listen.
Okie doke, very good, Sam. Well, we're still open for business. Anyone have any questions, comments, topics for discussion, feel free to hit that push to talk.
KC2BGI. My mobile rig says 13.8. So when I adjust the power supply, I try to set it to 13.8.
Yeah, that's fine. I charge up my lithium iron phosphates, and the charging voltage is higher than 13 volts. So right now I have my variable power supply that's feeding a couple of mobile radios and a bunch of other things at 14.7 volts. So and most machines will certainly take that. I wouldn't suggest giving it 15 volts. But, if you want to actually charge lithium iron phosphate using the power supply, you're going to have to creak it up beyond 14.5. Otherwise, it's just going to sit there and not do much.
Oh, okay. When my car is off, I think the battery reads something like 12.5 volts. Car batteries are like 90 amps. But when I turn the car on, it goes up to 14. So that's a difference there.
Yeah, I think that's the generator kicking in and giving you that. You need higher voltage potential to reverse the chemistry of any battery. So usually charging voltages are higher than discharging voltages.
Yeah, it comes from the alternator. Yeah, the extra power. But I try to avoid... I try to always run stuff on 13.8. I don't know, for some reason. But I looked at the manual for my mobile, and it says 13.8. That's what it runs on. But I got a power supply, 50 amps. And it only puts out exactly 12.5 volts. I can't get it to 13. It won't go up there.
Yeah, well, that's the way its voltage regulator is set. So, if it's only set for 12.5, it's only set for 12.5. It's, most power supplies that I've seen usually go up to 15 volts. But if it's strictly meant for, in a automobile, then I guess someone thought it was a good idea to set the limit at 12.5. For most electronics, I find that 13 and change works fine. It doesn't cause any problems at all. And you also have to keep in mind that depending upon the resistance, the thickness of the power line, you don't have a nice thick wire for your power, you're going to have some voltage loss across the power conductors. So A lot of times, although your power supply might be putting out 12.5, if you're using a relatively thin piece of